The answers to the errors of modern times need to be given in philosophy and theology, wrote Dr. Benjamin Lockhart, but it is essential that our students also experience the truth imaginatively. Welcome to Wyoming Catholic College's After Dinner Scholar Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. This is the third and final installment in our podcast series on Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, the Wyoming Catholic College 2017-18 Book of the Year. It's a book that highlights the Catholic intellectual tradition in the liberal arts, and one we especially recommend that you read and study this year. Our guest for this third podcast is Dr. Benjamin Lockhart, Professor of English at Grand Valley State University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Dr. Lockhart is a member of the Wyoming Catholic College Catholic Scholars Advisory Board, and in September 2012, Dr. Lockhart delivered a lecture at Wyoming Catholic College entitled Beyond Politics, Christopher Dawson and T.S. Eliot on Church and State. Dr. Lockhart, let me begin by asking, what attracts you to Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, and why do you choose to teach it to your students?
That's a good question, and I haven't thought about it in a long time. I've loved it so long that I almost forget to think about it. I fell in love with the poem when I was a student and took a whole graduate course on the poem where we worked through the Middle English version of it, translating it line by line. And I think for my students who won't go through that whole experience and only get a day or two on the poem, a class meeting or two, it's a great example of the Arthurian legends, of the chivalric romances of the Middle Ages. And it's, I think, the most profound of all in the way it deals with profound human issues. It's also very beautiful. I was thinking I might talk a little bit about the language of the poem and maybe read the first stanza in Middle English. Would that be good?
That would be a great thing to do. In fact, I was going to ask you, the anonymous author was a contemporary of Chaucer's. At least on the surface, the two appear to be very different, and beginning with the language. I can read Chaucer after three or four pages. I can't even begin to touch this. So tell us about the language.
Right. Yes, they are contemporaries, but Chaucer lived at court and spoke the dialect of the big city and of the court. And that, of course, became the standard dialect. That's why the language of the Gawain poet is so difficult, because it's a provincial dialect from the North Midlands region of England, and it didn't become the standard dialect, so it died out or changed in different ways. So they're both speaking in or writing in Middle English, not Old English. That's the language of Beowulf and that time period, hundreds of years earlier. And it's a language mixed with French. It's a Germanic language, but mixed with French since the Norman conquest. But Chaucer's language is more Frenchified, if you will, and the Gawain poet is more English in his language. Can I read you the first stanza?
By all means.
All right. It sounds a little bit like this. Sith in the sage and the assault was seized at Troy, the Borg, Britannid, and Brent, Bondas and Askers, the Tulk that the traumas of treason there wrought, was treated for his treachery the truest on earth. He was Aeneas, the Athol, on his he kinde, that sith and depressed provinces and patroonas become well may of all the well in the west eves. For rich Romulus Tom riches him swift, with great Bobans that Burg he biggest upon first, and Nevin is hit his own nom as he knew hat. Tesius to Tuscan and Telda's beginners, Langebert in Lombardy lift us up homus, and fair over the French flood, Felix Brutus on money bonkers full broad Breton he set us with win. Where wear and rock and wonder be sithes hat thought wont therein, and oft both bliss and blunder, full skate hath skifted sin. That's the first stanza, and I'm sure you pick up some English words that still are alive, but it's rough, and as I said, in the grad class I took on the poem, we spent the whole semester working through the translation of it.
It's beautiful, though.
It is. It's really beautifully written. We don't know his name, but he was a great poet.
How do your students respond to the story and its themes? And I'm thinking particularly of chivalry, courtesy, courtly love, virtue, honor, and the various Christian themes that run through it.
I think they find it pretty interesting. And in addition to those themes that you mentioned, I would add what I think is one central idea is the kind of contrast between civilization and nature. Because the court of Arthur is this beautiful outpost of civilization, and in the Arthurian legends generally, he is seen as having tamed the country, unified the country, and brought it to a much higher level of civility. But it's always under attack, and in the full Arthurian stories as told by Malory and others, that disintegrates too. In this poem, we find that Camelot is at the height of its power and is admired greatly, but you get this weird green knight entering in during their Christmas celebration and challenging them. It sets up an immediate contrast between the civilization that they're trying to form at Camelot and the natural force of the Green Knight himself. The poem begins at Camelot and then goes to the Green Chapel, which is really just a hole in the ground. There's nothing constructed there at all. It's completely natural. So those are the two poles the poem works on. And I think the students find that pretty interesting. Of course, it's a great old story, the beheading game and all. I think it's irresistible.
When Sir Gawain is guest at the strange knight's castle, his wife tempts him, the knight's wife tempts him. At the end of the third temptation, she gives him a kiss and the green girdle that's supposed to protect him from death. When she leaves, he hides the girdle, goes to the chapel, finds a priest, and it says, and he told his sins, small and large, and prayed for the mercy of Almighty God, and begged the priest to absolve him, and his soul was anointed so completely clean that the judgment day could have come with the sun and been welcome. Well, of course, the judgment day does come for Sir Gawain when the sun comes up, and in this text, and then after Gawain receives his blow from the Green Knight, it seems the author wants us to think about the green girdle and the sacrament of confession together. Would that be accurate? And what is the relationship between the two in the story?
Yes, I think that is accurate. And it's a bit confusing because, as you say, he does go to confession, but then he gets a second confession, as it were, at the chapel, the Green Knight's chapel. The Green Knight, in my translation, around line 2389, says, "Then the other laughed aloud, and lightly he said, 'Such harm as I have had, I hold it quite healed. You are so fully confessed, your failings made known, and bear the plain penance of the point of my blade. I hold you polished as a pearl.'" So he's not a priest, presumably does not have the full ability to absolve Gawain of his sins, but there's a kind of semi-secular confession and absolution here.
And it's the confession of his sins, not the green girdle, that saves his life? Is that fair to say?
Well, right, yes, yeah. At this point, the truth about the green girdle is out, and Gawain confesses that he cheated at the game, and he's ashamed of it. He takes his punishment, which is supposed to be death, but turns out to be just a scratch.
What are we to make of Sir Gawain's rather anti-woman rant after the blow from the Green Knight and the revelation the Green Knight knows all? He says, "There's nothing remarkable in their making a man foolish, in women winning men to sin." And then he cites Eve and Delilah and so on. What are we to make of that?
Well, I'm afraid it's a pretty normal kind of feature of medieval writing and doesn't seem to be, I don't see that this poet is putting that in any kind of ironic context here. So I don't have a good explanation for it other than good old-fashioned misogyny. But on the other hand, we do see that in the poem, women have a pretty strong role. And one thing that Gawain learns at the Green Chapel is that the whole thing was orchestrated by this old crone who was at the castle. And we hear that she's actually Morgan le Fay, Morgan the Fairy, fixture of the Arthurian legends. Not only is she a fairy, but she's called here Morgan the Goddess. So even though Gawain rants against women, it comes out that women have a great deal of power in this poem.
Sticking with the theme of the green girdle, the final words of the poem are "Honi soit quid mal pense." Shame on him who finds evil here. And that's the motto of the Knights of the Garter. What is that about, and how does that relate to the ending of the story, where after hearing Gawain's tale, all the Knights of the Round Table wear green girdles?
Yes, I think I would start back at the first stanza that I read to you, which ends with this statement that both bliss and blunder have taken turns in the history of England and of humanity. And strangely, in that first stanza, there's some talk of treason that's very confusing, because the treason in question is of Aeneas, who in classical literature, of course, is a peerless leader. And nobody seems to know for sure where this idea of some treasonous act on the part of Aeneas came from. But right at the beginning of the poem, you get this mixture of good and evil, even in Aeneas himself. And at the end of the poem, we see that mixture of good and evil in Sir Gawain, the peerless champion of the court. By the way, we see that this is a more English version of the Arthurian tales, in that Gawain is the chief knight, not Lancelot, who's a French addition to the story. We're really looking at an early kind of more purely English telling of the story. And Gawain is the best knight they have, yet he is flawed. So the poem really touches into the profound awareness of sin on the part of all humanity. And then when he goes back to the court, of course, he's ashamed, but the court laughs and takes it pretty lightly. And Arthur orders that everyone should wear a green sash like this. And this is a reference to the founding of the Order of the Garter a couple of generations earlier. It becomes a badge of honor as much as of shame, in a strange kind of ending. But I think what it is an acceptance of our humanity, our sinfulness, and hope for salvation.
Yeah, and dependence on grace.
Can I mention one more thing before you let
by
me go?
Means.
And
oh,
that
by
is
all means.
The numerology of the poem is so interesting. Just as Dante's favorite number is 3, this poet loves the number 5. And you have the pentangle on Gawain's shield is kind of the main symbolic 5 in the poem, which the poet associates with the 5 mysteries of the rosary and 5 fingers on the hand and so on and so forth. 5 is called the marriage number. It's the first combination of the first even and the first odd number, 2 and 3. So it's a kind of union of opposites, the number 5. And he's so keen on it that he actually ends with the last full line of the poem is line 25, 25, 5 squared and 5 squared. These medieval writers were very interested in numerology, and this poet clearly counted the lines in his poem and wanted to end on a double 5 note.
Interesting. Well, it's a wonderful story. We've talked about some very profound things as we've looked at the book with you and with Dr. Arbery and with Dr. Lesnowski. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
The knight is a man of blood and iron, wrote C.S. Lewis, a man familiar with the sight of smashed faces and the ragged stumps of lopped-off limbs. He is also a demure, almost maiden-like guest in a hall. a gentle, modest, unobtrusive man. He is not compromise or happy mean between ferocity and meekness. He is fierce to the nth degree and meek to the nth degree. The man who combines both characters, the knight, is not a work of nature, but of art. Of that art which has human beings instead of canvas or marble for its medium. Close quote. We hope you've enjoyed this three-part foray into the world of King Arthur, Sir Gawain, and the Knights of the Round Table. If you're interested in learning more, our faculty has prepared a study guide to accompany your reading of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. Visit our website, wyomingcatholic.org, and request your copy today. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.